Joining me now on Our Town is Megan Messmer and Mike Miller, and we're going to talk city. We are a city in motion. I tell you what, I cannot believe, you guys, how much work is getting done in this city. It's amazing.
It is.
Yes.
It's a lot of work, a lot of planning, a lot of projects that have been in the works for a number of years that are finally coming to fruition.
Now, we're obviously going to talk about Revision Florence, but before we get to that, I mean, there are projects that are not necessarily in the city's control, but the city's affected by, like the bridge project, right? That is something that's been ODOT and the state has been working on that, and that's getting ready to finish up as we get ready to start the next project, right?
That is correct. So there are projects in the community, such as the Siuslaw River Bridge, that are, you know, controlled by ODOT. Likewise, and Megan will talk a lot about Revision Florence, but Revision Florence is that cooperation between ODOT and the city, taking the opportunity for doing something very special for the city instead of just a street grind inlay project. So that's a really cool cooperation and collaboration with the state, which is making something really awesome for this community.
Now, Megan, this project obviously has been a long time in the works, and
yes,
we thought for a minute we may not even get done because the project came back kind of high, and you had a guys kind of had to regroup with that. But you did some preliminary work to start off with. Let's talk about the preliminary work. We did some digging in the roads, put down some – did fiber go in there? Did they put fiber in when they were – changing the water lines and everything out? Or is that something that's going to happen?
That will happen.
Okay.
So leading up to this project, we've been working with ODOT since 2015 on the planning. We've done a lot of work already. We've designed, engineered the project. We've acquired temporary and permanent right-of-way easements. We've done all our geotechnical environmental work to date, so we're ready to move on to construction. While we were working with ODOT over the last 3 to 4 years on that side, the city has also done some projects that we knew needed to get done before ODOT repaves the road. Once they repave the road, we don't want to go in and have to do some projects in the near future, at least.
Right.
So Mike was able to work those projects in ahead of our construction.
Which is good, because I always hate that when you see a brand new, a freshly paved road, and then all of a sudden they go, oh, we got to come in there and do a water meter or something like that. And they have to tear
absolutely.
It up again.
Absolutely. And it gives not only the city black eye, it gives the utility black eye when something is, you know, as we'd like to say in the industry, black and beautiful, you know, pristine pavement. And then, you know, 6 months, a year later, here comes the crews to tear it all up again. So we worked really hard knowing intimately what our master plan says, what our issues are in that corridor, getting ahead of it, taking that opportunity to open it up. And what people don't realize is by doing it early, like we did, there are some conditions that ODOT places on utilities to go into the right-of-way, go into the street pavement. And by doing it early, because it's going to get torn up, we did not have to go in and do 20-foot swath of pavement overlay after our utilities were done. So it minimized our costs, but got us in there well ahead of time.
So what has been put in the ground so far? I mean, I know that they're going to take the utilities off the poles and put them in. Did they preliminary do the run work for those, or is that yet to come? Is that one of the first stages?
Yeah, so that will be with this construction project. Alex Hodge Construction is our contractor, and they will be undergrounding the utilities in cooperation with our different utilities as they start construction.
So I have a question. Now, obviously, they're going to put, you know, the power poles are going to disappear. Phone and power will be under.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that going to stop at 101 and 126, or are they going to do a couple blocks past that so you don't look up North 101 and then see the poles again there?
Well, it will stop at 101 and 126, and it'll only be the 101 corridor. The lines coming in on 126 are more of our main power cables as opposed to your other utilities like cable, internet, phone. Those are the primary ones that we're putting underground. Currently on the corridor, most of the lines you see are those other utilities. We will leave 3 aerial crossings, which again are the main power feeds for the west side of the community in that area. But all the runs running parallel to the highway will be put underground.
And of course, now stage 1 is the west side of 101. from the bridge to 126. And yes. How long is that going to take, approximately?
So they'll do it in stages. They will start that on Monday, March 4th, which you will already have seen their work going on. And then they'll start stage two after Roadie Day, so the end of May. So they're going to work in kind of a horseshoe. They'll start on the west side going south, move down to the bridge, jump over to the east side, go north, and then head over east on 126.
Now, I noticed in some of the preliminary paperwork, they talked about, you know, certain restrictions on closing lanes and things like that. They didn't say they wouldn't close lanes after Memorial Day, but they would limit the lane closures. Is that correct?
Yes. So we've worked with ODOT on the maintenance side on what our restrictions for lane closures are. Prior to Memorial Day, the contractor can close a single lane on either side of the highway. So that's the furthest out lane, closest to the sidewalk. So that's where they'll be staging their equipment and where you'll see them working. After Memorial Day, when it is our busier season, they will be limited to the east side of the highway, so the northbound lane. The reasoning behind that is our traffic coming from the south, before they hit the bridge, they're already a single lane. So we'll just keep them in the single lane of traffic on the highway, as opposed to the southbound lane, which is two lanes, and trying to funnel them in, that becomes a little more congested. So we're just going to keep the status quo until the end of the construction length.
Now, what about the cutouts, like if you're heading southbound right before 7th and 6th there? Will that incorporate into part of the roadway, or will those remain, or will that become sidewalk in those areas there? Like the little dip out, like where Banner Bank is and then where Sears is, mm-hmm. there's sort of like a cutout there that's a little wider than the rest of the road.
Yes, yeah, so we'll still have those at the intersections. That'll either define our parking that will be in front of those businesses, or it'll be a continuation of where the new sidewalk and landscaping is. There's parking throughout the corridor, but it's not consistent. So you'll see different configurations on different blocks.
And the bike lanes.
Yes.
That's be huge for us is... The bike lane actually ends at 126, so we'll have bike lanes continuing mm-hmm. south all the way to the bridge in both directions.
Yes. Now, on the west side of the street, which is the first stage of the project, mm-hmm. Obviously ingress and egress is going to be difficult at times for some businesses. What needs to be done with those businesses? Are they going to be hooked up to power and new water and stuff like that, or is some of that already done?
So as the contractor moves throughout the corridor, they will be talking to those businesses. Our superintendent was at our pre-construction meeting last Wednesday, and he discussed this as well. He's going to be on a first-name basis with all of our businesses and property owners. We want to give them as much lead time as possible for any outages that they may have and coordinate those with their business, because we don't want to impact them if we can help it to the greatest extent. And then access to their buildings will be maintained. It may not look the same, but there may be an alternate route.
Right.
So we will work as hard as we can to keep that access there. And then the communication with them, we will be working both as the city and ODOT and the contractor with those business and property owners.
Now, the roads that are perpendicular to 101, you know, like 5th, 6th, and 7th and all, now those may be closed at some time for, I think it was 10 consecutive days they could be closed up to. Will they do one at a time or will they do two at a time? How will that work?
Yes, so it'll be more singular. You mentioned at our meeting that they'll be working kind of in two block segments, and they're going to do their best to complete any impacts to one segment before they move to the next. So you won't necessarily be impacted in the highest amount for the whole corridor. It'll just be in small segments.
Now, I didn't look at the overview plan of that, but where Hoburg's is and the two roads meet that come out to 101, is that going to change at all, or is that going to stay remaining where sort of the two roads merge into 101 at the one point?
So we will alter that slightly. There'll be a plaza that gets put in to the south side of that intersection. There are a couple intersections along the corridor where if you pull up to Highway 101 now, you're kind of at a diagonal and it's hard to see to look either north or south for the oncoming traffic. So we tried to make those more at a 90-degree angle to the highway so that it's safer for everybody, people on the highway and on our local streets.
Yeah, because I noticed pulling out of 6th, sometimes you have to go past the stopping point to see up the road. And then wait until make sure it's safe.
And Maple Street is like that right now, too, where If there are RVs parked at the chamber getting information, it's really hard to see because you're already at a weird angle. So right. we'll tee that up to the highway to make that easier.
That sounds like a very good idea there. All right, so that's stage one, the west side of the mm-hmm. road. Then stage two will be, I'm guessing, the east side of 101. Mm-hmm. And again, you're incorporating a whole new scape here with wider sidewalks and everything. That's not going to effectively take up too much of the current roadway that's there, though, right?
Correct.
So you use existing median or existing side.
Right. Yeah. So where you see the curbs today, there's not really going to be any change in width. What you'll see is wider sidewalks. We are using basically 100% of the right-of-way. In some areas, we've actually had to get additional easements or additional right-of-way. A little bit, just so that in the future, if we had to take out like a sidewalk panel or do other work, we have the means to do it without encroaching on private property. So that footprint that you see, that expanse of asphalt and where that curb line is, that's pretty much where it's going to be when the project's over, except it'll be more defined with some radiuses and curb cuts to allow for parking, to define parking areas, better landscaping to define parking areas and where the bike lanes are. So it's going to have a very nice feel to it once it's complete.
Now, what about when we get over to the 126 side? I guess that's slated for, in August? Is that going to come in, or is that not sometime
yes.
in August?
So beginning towards the end of August will be 126, and then some of the medians on Highway 101 are part of that.
How far does 126 go down? And that's just is it just the south side
the
of the
south
street?
Side of 126, and it goes to Spruce Street.
Okay.
So you'll see there isn't very much between kind of redwood and spruce, but there is a little bit that you'll see along that section of the corridor.
Okay. And then, of course, the other side, they're doing the public art project on the Central Lincoln PUD building.
Yes.
So that's going to kind of stay. It'll be nicer, but the roadway will stay the same, right?
Yes.
Correct.
And okay. they aren't repaving 126 at this time, so it's primarily the sidewalks, the plaza areas, and then the landscaping.
And so that 126 paving is not included in the overall price and cost of this project then?
Correct. So okay. 126 was paved several years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's not part of this ODOT maintenance project. They're sticking to Highway 101.
I noticed though also too, when you're coming out of Quince there, that's also, it's hard to see sometimes with the traffic coming down there too. So hopefully that widening that will make that, or widening the sidewalk, giving a little more room for people to see, might help out a little bit there.
Oh, absolutely. And that was one of the design elements, is to look at that vision clearance and the visual lines to make it safer at those intersections. So, yeah, it'll be a big improvement to what we have today.
Yes. So, is there anything else you want to touch on Revision Florence? I mean, as far as what's going to be happening timeline-wise? Or?
Just we're starting March off with construction, and we'll go through October. If anybody wants updates, the city has a Facebook page, but we have also created a specific Revision Florence construction updates page, which you can get to from our city Facebook, our city website. You can ask me. I'll send the link to you, whatever you'd like. We want to keep people as up-to-date as possible. We'll also put all those updates on our Revision Florence website, which is linked on the homepage of the city website.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Now, happening at the same time on the north end of town, there's a big 17-acre parcel that they're going to be developing for multi-use and for living and for shopping. So it needs sewer, right?
Well,
or is that just part of it?
So the property across from Fred Meyer,
right.
Cannery Station, it already has full service.
Okay.
So this project
is extending past that.
It's extending past. So Muscle Lake Road north, we might as well say up to Hasita Beach Road. We're short of that, but it's to bring sewer to that area that's currently unsewered. There's no sewer, essentially, especially on the west side from Muscle Lake Road north. And then on the east side, we have a pump station, which would be in a line with 52nd Street. If it came all the way out to 101 from that point north, there's no sewer also. So this project extends sewer. There's already water facilities out there. But provides sewer to these properties so that they have an opportunity to develop. It's a very unique situation. Typically, we look for developers to extend sewer projects, but the city is taking this on. We have a partnership with the properties on the west side that they've all agreed to help participate in this project. So they're paying their pro rata share or their equal share of the project. You know, what it would cost to bring sewer to their properties. They're paying for that portion. And then on the east side, we're doing a reimbursement district because there's several properties that are currently outside the city limits that are not annexed, but they're wanting to annex. So we're doing a reimbursement district. So it's a little different when they hook up and they pay for the service.
What is a, and I'll use Florence as an example, but what does a city do when we started small? We've sort of got industrialized on the north end of town on the west side of the street and kind of haphazardly put homes and stuff up on the right-hand side. You got a nice new cannery station that's going to be going in there. How do you work with businesses to maybe to develop the industrial into something that's a little bit more eye-catching? Is there something you can do for that, or is that just kind of one of those things where...
Well, so, you know, that's kind of...
Or is this a catch-22? Is this a can of worms?
It's... Yes and no. We try to plan and have planning regulations and land use regulations in place to encourage the proper development of properties, what that vision is. And you know, the city does go out and do the comprehensive plan. We're working on, you know, the 2020 plan.
Revitalize
Florence or...
One of those words.
And I apologize because I'm just butchering that because I'm not the planning director. And, you know, Public Works is a little bit different. But these plans are in place that looks at how the city should grow. And then there's regulations in place to encourage the proper development, whether it's architectural standards or, you know, other mechanisms in place to encourage the either development or redevelopment of properties. So the city does take a look at that and plan for that. The comprehensive plan is going to be redone here in the next few years because we're approaching that timeline. It's always a 20-year look ahead. It's time to refresh that and do the next round because there is changes over a course of time. The city does grow and it does expand in ways that we may have not have thought of. So it's time to take that deeper look and really plan on what the city really wants to be in the future.
Okay. How is the water situation set up, the treatment plant and everything for future growth and that? Are we looking pretty good for that or is that going to be needing upgrades? How many more people can we handle with what we're using?
And there? That's a great question. We have many tools in the toolbox. We do 20-year master planning on water and wastewater and stormwater facilities, transportation facilities. And so our drinking water, you know, we're able to produce 3 million gallons a day. Our peak day right now is about 2 million. So during the heat of the summer, 2 million gallons a day. We still have 1 million gallons left over in capacity. So that's our trigger. We're looking really good. We have supply. You know, with the economy and the recession, it kind of took a lot of the growth projections out and threw them out the window. And so we've had slower growth than anticipated. We were looking at major expansion of water facilities, so the drinking water plant itself, additional well field, additional treatment plant capacity happening in probably like 2030. And now we're probably looking more like 2040, maybe even 2050 now, just depending on growth. So we do watch that and we monitor things, but we're nimble and we're able to react. Same way with the wastewater treatment plant. Treatment plant has a capacity of 1.3 million gallons a day of what we refer to as dry weather capacity. We're at about 800,000 gallons a day. So we have half million gallons a day of capacity. And we look at that, and there's some modules that we can do to expand, but we look at that and we always try to anticipate and be ahead of the curve so that we have the capacity to supply the future. And we don't just look at the city, we look at especially for the wastewater, the urban growth boundary area, because that's the area that we will be providing service to. Water, on the other hand, we do have a neighboring water district that has defined boundaries And so we look at what we're supposed to take care of within our boundary and make those projections.
So you're kind of easing one of my concerns, because, you know, there's an icky question that I never wanted to ask, but now I feel like I have to. What the wastewater treatment plant water, what happens with that?
So it goes. So our system it's a really robust system. So it's a anaerobic digestion system. So I'll just kind of lay it right out. So when you flush the toilet, or you take a shower, or do things in the sink, and everything goes down in your drain, it goes into the city system out in the street, and it, by gravity, or in some areas by pump stations, it flows down to our wastewater treatment plant. Once it gets to the wastewater treatment plant, it goes through a process where it's screened. So some of the paper products, things that aren't supposed to be flushed, get screened out.
Blue jeans have shown up in there before.
All sorts of random things.
You know, hypodermic needles, other things.
Yeah, right.
So we screen all that material out, and it goes into the aeration basin. So the aeration basin is a large basin where air is introduced into the system, activates the anaerobic digestion process where we have beneficial bugs start to digest the sewer. And then from there, it goes into a clarifier, which allows the solids to settle out to the bottom. And then the clear liquid flows over the top of the weirs and goes out into a UV area where it's treated with UV light and disinfected. So we have an almost complete kill of all the bacteria, and then it's discharged out into the river.
Okay. Goes out to the river.
Goes out to the river. Okay. But the solids stay on plant.
Right.
From the clarifier, they go into the digester, and the digester does more digestion. It's like, think of it as your stomach. It
right.
continues to digest, break down the solids, the organic matter.
So you start out with a large mass and with a smaller mass when you're
exactly.
done. What happens to that?
So
we're creative.
So instead of here on the coast, we have a couple options. Right. One is to take that digested sludge. We dewater it, and it can either go to the landfill, or it can go to beneficial use at a what's called Herd Farms. It's in southern part of Oregon, where they go and they land apply it for hay fields and other non.
It's almost like a compostable thing.
It is. Yeah. But then we also have a composting operation at the wastewater plant where we take some of those solids, right now about a third of them, and we compost them. We mix them with yard debris, so mulched yard debris. We mix it together. We cover it with a Gore-Tex cover, add some air to it, and it decomposes, heats up, kills all the pathogens. We actually get up to temperatures of 160 degrees, which is important because once you get up over 130, you've met the definition of pathogen kill. But at 160 degrees, you're actually deactivating seed materials. So whether it's tomato seeds or scotch broom, anything that can get into, whether it's the sewer system or into the yard debris, it's deactivated once it reaches those temperatures. And we create a compost, a mulch that is a Class A product, which means for the community, we can give it to you, we can sell it, you can use it in your garden, you can use it on your landscaping, you can use it to top dress your lawn. It's a product that has good value, that has nutrients and a little bit of fertilizer to it, and it really works well. And we've used it, typically we've had some yard debris giveaways or what we call flow grow giveaways. But this last year, we have used 100% of it on city projects. Everything we've produced, we've used.
That's pretty cool.
That's very cool. I
never really realized the process before, but now I feel a little more educated.
And we save resources and not having to pay to dispose of it elsewhere.
It's pretty cool. Well, what else is happening with the city, real quickly? If you got anything else that's going on that you want to chime in about, you know, something exciting or, you know, anything upcoming that.
So we have a couple other projects that are coming up. We have a major airport lighting project, upgrade project coming online. We're hoping that they would be starting March 4th. Unfortunately, due to the weather,
very prolific storm we had,
and the contractor is based out of Roseburg, they're not able to get all their equipment here in time to do the start of the 4th. So we've pushed that back to the 18th, but they'll be starting on the 18th. So what does that mean, you know, to the general public? Not a whole lot, but to the aviation community, it's a big deal because the airport will be closed from 10 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night during Monday through Friday. It will be opened up definitely on Saturday and Sundays, but navigational aids will be offline because it is electrical work that's being done. So
it'll be VFR only for
exactly,
the airport.
Yeah. Exactly. So the beacon will be off, the lighted windsock will be off, and then, of course, the precision approach and runway indicator lights will be offline during this construction period, which will last about 60 days. And once it's done, then it'll be all new lighting, all new precision approach indicator lights that are LED, new medium intensity runway lights, and one of the things that we've never had at the airport is runway and indicator lights. So that will be a new add for the airport. We'll make it much safer.
And what's great about this is, you know, I've heard, I had people ask me, well, why do we need this? Well, you don't realize this, the system at 20 plus years is antiquated.
It's pushing it really 30 is. Years.
30 years, yeah.
30 plus years, yeah. I believe it was in 84 when the lighting was installed.
And there's been so many progresses with like LED lighting and stuff like that.
LED lighting, and then just the reality of being on the coast.
Yep.
Very harsh environment, very corrosive environment for lighting systems.
Well, I thank you both for coming today. This is great information, and I look forward to – one thing we didn't talk about was the art that'll be going, but that's an ongoing thing. We don't know exactly what's going in yet, right?
Correct. So okay. We've left space for art pieces within the Revision Florence project corridor, but those are not included in this construction project. They will be done later. Yeah. As we know, contractors aren't necessarily the artists that would make these sculptures, and they don't want to do it. So right. We'll add that afterwards.
All right. Well, thank you both. Great information here, and look forward to this project going. And hopefully my 6th Avenue entrance to my house won't be closed for too long.
There we go.
All right. Thank you
we
both.
Do have lots of streets in town.
Yes, we do.
You'll find your way around.
All right. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Our Town, we'll talk with Athletic Director for Syosla Schools, Chris Johnson, right after this on the March edition of Our Town.